Hey, Anna, you know there's five planets that are visible to the naked eye, right?
Right.
Now, which one is the brightest of all the planets you can see from Earth with the naked eye?
Pass.
Pass. It is the planet Venus.
I knew. Yeah, Venus. Right, Venus.
Yep. Because it's been visible so much in the evening sky, like right after dark, it is so incredibly bright.
It's crazy.
I mean, super bright, like suspiciously bright. Like you're watching it, you're like, that is coming at me.
Like conspiracy theory,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So what's the deal with Venus? I thought I'd get you that one. Why is Venus so bright?
Well, and it's so early.
Oh,
it's suspicious, right?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting you thinking.
Yeah.
It's suspicious. Now, why is it so bright? Well, because it's got these highly reflective clouds on it. So the sunlight is shining millions of miles, hitting Venus's cloud tops, then bouncing millions of miles back to Earth. And then you're actually seeing that light. And so Venus's clouds are really reflective. They're like almost like a mirror. And so that's why they can bounce all this light towards us. And that's why it's so bright.
I like it.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it's very cool. I think it's a little weird, but cool.
Yeah, and you can see it every night after sunset in the west for the next couple months. And so,
but before it gets dark, dark, right?
Yes, that's true.
That's weird.
You have to get it right before it sets. So right as it gets dark, you have about an hour, maybe an hour and a half if you're lucky, but somewhere around there. After too late, then Venus is gone and you have to wait till the next day. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean knows all about space, and I have lots of questions about space. In this episode, we're going to talk about the U.S. Space and Rocket Center and space camps with their Director of Communications, Pat Ammons. All right, well, we're full on into summer now.
Oh, yeah.
Full on.
You're loving it, aren't you?
It's like, as I sweat in
the
studio right now.
No. It's very hot.
Yeah, summer, we're here. So what is your big summer plan, Dean? What's going on?
Well, summertime is a good time to do some stargazing, get out in the middle of nowhere.
You're such a company man. You're like, you know, it's a great time for it. Stargazing.
That's right.
We know you're an astronomer.
Wait, so you're doing the impressions of the comedians.
I know. I'm not doing that. All right, sorry.
I'm not going to do the Seinfeld again. I can't do it.
Please
He's
don't.
He's going to sue us.
I can't.
Well, I just got back from the Grand Canyon. I did a trip out there for a star party. So they do a week-long star party at the Grand Canyon at the South Rim. So they had 50 telescopes set up there all week so people can go there at in the evening. And an astronomer gives a talk at night in the theater, and then you go outside and just go from telescope to telescope.
Are they all focused on different things?
Oh, yeah. So it's all different things. So we had some on Saturn, some on Jupiter, some on Mars, and some on like nebulas and asteroids. There's an asteroid, clusters and that kind of stuff. And so they have like 1,000 people a night go through all these telescopes. It is really cool. And so the national parks are really trying to do this kind of stuff. And so this is my third year going out and speaking at them. And it's so cool to see all these folks from like all around the country that are coming out there. And so this was part of my working vacation where I went out there. And well, so then before that, you know,
the vacation
part was I went to Sedona, Arizona also. And man, the skies there are so gorgeous. And well, the whole scene is really gorgeous.
Did you just sweat your face off the whole time though?
It was 90 something during the day, but then it's the desert, so it gets cool at night.
Yeah,
and
that's
so it was
nice.
Like in the 50s at night. And so then after Sedona, I went up to Flagstaff, Arizona, where they have the world famous Lowell Observatory. So they have these two old, lots of old telescopes there, including the telescope that discovered Pluto. Your favorite non-planet.
Twist the knife, Dean.
You
need to have that as like your ringtone, just like whenever someone like womp womp.
That's right.
That's okay.
They talk about Pluto. But it was cool because at this event, they had they rededicated the Pluto telescope because it had been kind of like not used or anything like that. So it was kind of the shrine, but then they fixed it all up. And at the event, they had all these Pluto people there, like
like advocating for Pluto to be like reintroduced as a planet.
It was the who's who of Pluto people that were there. There was
a very small group of
family. It was pretty big.
Just like a
it is a small object. That's true, but it was who's who. It was the Tombaughs were there. All the relatives of Clyde Tombaugh, the guy who discovered Pluto, were there.
Oh my God, are you
all
serious?
All the relatives of the Lowells from the Lowell Observatory is there. In fact, Percival Lowell, they brought his car out. Now, this is a guy, very wealthy individual that can basically build his own observatory in Flagstaff and make a telescope world class with his own money.
Wow.
His car was like the size of a Hummer, but it was like from the 19-teens. And they like wheeled it out there. It was huge.
Really?
And so that's his car they would drive around Flagstaff with.
It works still? Like it runs?
Well, they said it did, but then I saw him pushing it by hand. But that's something I shouldn't have probably let that out. Sorry, Lowell people. But I think it works.
Oh,
my gosh. They're just kind of protective of it.
And they're just like, it's cool. Pluto's not a planet anymore. We'll just be sitting right here.
No, no. To them, Pluto is a planet. It's always
been
a planet.
They're being sarcastic if I know what that's what I was
saying.
Oh, doing.
They're deadly serious.
They're like mad.
Then Alan Stern was there.
Alan, yeah.
The guy that was kind of the person that made the New Horizons mission to Pluto go. And he had his car there too.
Oh,
this old Z, this Nissan Z convertible thing
fancy.
He donated to somebody. And it had a bumper sticker. It said, "My other vehicle goes to Pluto," or something like that. It was really cool. So Alan Stern's there. And then Jim Christie, the guy who discovered Pluto's moon. Sharon was there.
Oh, my gosh.
This was like
the gang's all here.
I mean, I was like, who are all these? Oh, my gosh. And I'm there, too. And I'm just like
taking
pictures.
Did they ask you what you thought about it?
They first of all, didn't know who I was, which is
what?
Fine. I know.
Who are these people?
Well, you know, they're discoverers of Pluto and Pluto's moons. But and what have I discovered? I discovered I don't know. iPhones just recently.
Like, we're just like blanking.
I know. I can't even think of anything I discovered.
You discovered that Mazunta, that good taco place.
That's true.
I think you told me about that. Thanks for that.
That was a good discovery.
That's a good discovery.
Sometimes I get
free
restaurants.
Free advertising.
Yeah, we need some. Yeah, that's a good idea. We should do that. We should drop the place people's names to get some free stuff.
We should. You know, speaking of free stuff, why do you think that I was not invited to the speaking? I can't even stop doing that laughing.
No, you can't.
I mean, that's like, come on. I'm like, I mean, it's a team here.
Yeah,
team environment.
I think so. They should.
And
have
you're just
had
like,
you
I'm gonna go. I'm fine.
Well, it's not like I was invited to this event. Like, I wrote to them about 2 days before I was going there. I was like, so I'm coming to Flagstaff. Anything going on at the Lowell Observatory? And they're like, well, you can come to this Pluto thing, I guess. And I was like,
don't touch the car.
Don't touch the car. Don't talk to any of the guests. No. They were like, yeah, sure. We're having this event.
Oh,
come to it.
That.
And that. So it was like, so I was one of the gang.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody knew who I was. It's fine. So, I mean, they are important astronomers. And, they're fine and discovering things and all
that
stuff.
You know.
So
where, fun,
what do you do for your summer vacation?
Does that revolve around space?
No,
sorry.
Oh, man.
Well, my husband and I went to Charleston, which is a charming town. Mm-hmm. I watch a reality show called Southern Charm that is, your eyes have already glazed over.
Right.
You're like, whatever.
Are you thinking of the next
it's
question?
A good show, Dean, okay?
Yeah.
Anyway, no, it's just a lovely, you know, city and very cute. And we stayed in Mount Pleasant and we did just, you know, like some sightseeing stuff. It was also very hot there, a lot of pool time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was kind of spacey that I did not do, but Mike did, my husband Mike did, go to the Yorktown.
Okay.
And it's like the Yorktown, whatever. But it has the Apollo 8 capsule.
Yeah.
It like picked it up.
So it's the big ship.
Yeah, it's huge.
USS Yorktown. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I just saw it from the highway and I was like, what up, Yorktown? I'm going to go to the pool. But my husband's really into history. So Mike was like, I'm going to go check it out. And then I guess when the Apollo 8 capsule entered back into Earth's atmosphere, whatever, it fell in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And then Yorktown just like was like, dibs.
Yeah, they picked it up.
Like,
well, I mean, they planned it.
I love it. No, I like it. I like to think of it more as that they went rogue and they were like, this is ours now. But you're right. They did plan it.
I didn't know they kept it. Yeah, so the Apollo 8 capsule's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's right. That's I saw it cool. on Mike's iPhone. He took a picture. So it's like I was there.
Yeah.
I mean, read People magazine at the pool, but still.
Yeah. So, but you.
By proxy, I was
there. You were happy that he did it, at least.
I was
proud
excited.
Of him. You're
I was
proud of him.
That's right. I mean, it was cool I didn't realize that was a thing. If I'd known before, I might have gone.
Yeah.
But I get heat rage if it gets too hot. It's,
yeah.
You know that.
I understand.
You can't,
yeah.
you know. So that was really fun, though. And I didn't do anything else. Science or spacey.
Yeah.
Well, I do drop that I work at the observatory when I go abroad or
good.
Abroad to other places.
That's right.
You know, like, and.
You did recently say you're part of the jet set, which I thought was a little exaggerated, but.
I was kidding. Only because you made fun of me.
One no. trip.
Makes... One trip.
Now, for
folks
that are staying home for the summer
right.
or if looking for something to do, there's like two planets in the nighttime sky mm-hmm. that are going to be battling it out.
Such drama.
We've got Saturn and Mars up in the sky. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you have a particular favorite out of the two or if you could pick one. Which
I don't
one
know
do
that
like?
I've seen Mars through a telescope.
It's been a while.
But you know what I do like about Saturn?
Mm-hmm.
It's got rings.
Definitely.
A planet with an accessory is, I'm sold.
Oh, yeah. Now, so here's where the thing's going to happen. It's all going to go down here at the end of July between the two planets. They're going to be battling it out. Now, because Saturn got closest to Earth in late June, and then Mars is going to be closest to Earth on July 31st.
And it's the closest it's been?
Closest it's been in 15 years.
Okay, I like that.
So this is going to be the question. Which one of those two is going to get the public's attention? Because Saturn is by far the superior planet to see in a telescope. I mean, it's not even close.
Well, that was definitive.
Oh, yeah.
No,
I'm not batting an eye at that one. Because, yeah, Saturn is just straight up awesome in a telescope.
It is.
You look through it, you see this little planet with rings around it and moons and
it's
stripes.
So clear,
and it's so great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then we have Mars. And people love Mars. It's like they get in this frenzy to see Mars. Every 26 months, Mars gets close to us.
And
So, but this one's an especially close one. So it's closer than, since it's been 2003, that was the closest basically Mars ever gets. But 2018, this year, it's going to be like 1% different. It's going to be so close to the same that it was in 2003. It's going to be great.
Wasn't that like the biggest event the observatory ever had?
Exactly, yeah. So Mars at its closest drew probably the biggest crowd, maybe even bigger than the solar eclipse we had in August last year.
I'm still not recovered, so that's...
It's
terrifying
it's hard
to me.
It's hard to even imagine that this was possible. But that night in 2003, we opened at 9 or 8 o'clock at night.
Okay.
And then we had lines out the door, down the steps, down the street. And it was – people were waiting in line 2 or 3 hours to see Mars in the telescopes. And we were like, what in the world? What are we going to do? I mean, like, so we just stayed until the last person saw Mars that wanted to see Mars. We didn't leave until 4 a.m. It was nuts.
And it was just like, was it through the Mitchell scope?
We had Mitchell scope. We had Clark scope. We had portable scopes. We had everything. I have never seen that many people come for an event.
Note to self, call in sick for the Mars event this year at the observatory.
That's right.
Do you think it's going to be like that this year?
I don't know because I'm trying to get people more excited about Saturn because this is what happens.
Wait, what? Because you like Saturn so much?
Well, I like Saturn. But this is what happens. Mars is a very less picturesque object.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to go back to our guys at the Lowell Observatory in Arizona because before they were looking for Pluto, they were looking at Mars with their telescopes. And Mars is this like elusive, like, mystical planet because in a telescope it's small and you can't really see features very clearly, but every once in a while you're squinting, you think you see something and then it disappears, and then you think you see something, then it disappears. And so they were starting to see stuff like that wasn't there.
It's like see stuff like
so they were seeing lines on the planet and they thought those lines were canals, and then they're like, if it's canals, I bet Martians made them, and then there's Martians.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah.
That snowballed.
Well, I did summarize slightly, but that's what happens. And so that's what people see when they look through our scopes, because our scopes are essentially the same ones that Lowell looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at it, you're like, do I see something? I don't know. It's kind of iffy. And so sometimes I make a joke to people in there. They're looking at Mars, and they've waited an hour in line to see Mars. I'm like, so when you go up to the eyepiece, please, I want to hear like oohs and ahs and wows and awesomes. And I don't want to hear, oh, that's it, or I wait in line for this.
That's you tell them beforehand.
I tell them that ahead of time.
They're like, great.
That's what I heard so many times. It's like, ugh. it's so small. Or, oh my God. I'm like,
they like storm out.
Well, they were a little disappointed. And tell them why they're in line. Now, just to prepare yourself, it's not going to be that great. Go see Saturn. Saturn's right there in the other telescope.
Well, you know, it seems like a lot more people interested in our Saturn Day event.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
maybe it's working.
Now, the good news is if we get them over there for Mars at the end of July, mm-hmm. Saturn's still going to be in the sky.
Okay.
And so it's like they have that as a consolation prize. But Mars is it has its moments. And so maybe at the end of July, we might see like the ice caps on Mars. And then you could maybe see some features, some little dark marks on Mars. But stay for Saturn if you're disappointed with Mars.
Good advice.
If you're looking for a great summer science getaway for the family, there is a little piece of astronomy heaven in Huntsville, Alabama. It's the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, and it's also the home of the famous space camps for kids. We want to know more about this place, so we're really happy to welcome their Director of Communications, Pat Ammons. Well, Pat, thanks so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Happy to chat with you guys.
So as a space cadet myself, and let me speak for anybody who's ever dreamed about being an astronaut, is a space camp all that? Can you live out your astronaut fantasies at space camp?
You absolutely can. And we've been providing that opportunity since 1982, which is when Space Camp opened. And it started out as a kind of a small regional program. Really the brainchild of Dr. Wernher von Braun, who, of course, is was the lead German rocket engineer who came to America and helped develop the Saturn V moon rocket. So that was all done here in Huntsville, Alabama, which is a surprise for a lot of people. They don't realize, sometimes when people think about space travel, they think about Kennedy, where the rockets take off, and Johnson Space Center, where Mission Control is located. But in fact, it's Huntsville that does a lot of the heavy lifting, pun intended,
mm-hmm.
with the space program. So propulsion work is done here, as well as the Payload Operations Integration Center, which manages all the science payloads aboard the International Space Station. So Huntsville is a real epicenter for research and development for space exploration, and we are home to Marshall Space Flight Center, and that's a NASA facility that really is where kind of NASA got its really first steps, where NASA became emerged out of the Army Ballistic Missile Command. So that was the nexus of why we were here. And then Dr. von Braun was here at the Rocket Center one day, which was also his idea. He felt it was very important for the state of Alabama to recognize the work and the contributions of the people here in this community to space exploration. So the Rocket Center opened in 1970, and he was here after it had opened and said one day, as he was walking the grounds with the director, and said, why don't we have a kind of a program that can get students excited about space exploration? And that was the sort of the kernel, the seed for what has become now a program that has been going on for 36 years. It has about 800,000 graduates who are both children who've come through, but families as well as adults and teachers. So sometimes people are like, oh, I didn't get to go to space camp when I was a kid. And we have a hashtag, you're never too old.
Never too old, that's right.
You're never too old to go to space camp, because we have a wonderful weekend-long adult camp program. And also with our family camp program, which is also a weekend program, we get a lot of people who bring their children to family camp. Because I think it's important for them to introduce their children to these concepts. But in fact, a lot of times it's people who didn't get to go to space camp when they were kids.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's adults who came as children who want to come back and relive that experience and show it to their children, who oftentimes come back individually after they reach the right age. And we have individual space camp from ages 9 to 18. Not only have many astronaut careers been launched at space camp, but we also have had many students who've gone on to work in many areas of space exploration, both in mission control and, training astronauts to, communication specialists and everything in between.
Wow.
So, Pat, I visited, I didn't go to Space Camp, but my family, we went down to check out the center when I was a kid. Can you talk a little more about what, like, non-campers can do, folks that are just visiting, kind of when they come down to check it out?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Space and Rocket Center, as an entity, is the largest tourist attraction in the state of Alabama. So,
oh, wow.
It is one that we have visitors who come here from literally all over the world because of their fascination with space and also because of our extraordinary collection. We have on display a full-stack space shuttle, which is not a flown orbiter. It was a very important test vehicle. Part of the program, it was used for weight testing and wind testing and that sort of thing. And so we have it mounted on a full external fuel tank with the solid rocket boosters. And so to just visually see that is astounding.
Is that the one you can walk under?
Yes.
Okay, I remember that real vividly, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not something you forget. And then if you came as a child, you would have seen the Saturn V probably outside, Anna.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been outside. But in 2008, we moved it inside, and
okay.
It is now in a building called the Davidson Center for Space Exploration. And so you walk up the stairs, and one of my favorite visuals here is you walk past a plane that was patented here in Madison County, Alabama in 1908. And it was a local inventor, clearly looking at birds, trying to figure out how does one get off the ground, and had patent for a little airplane that he actually did get aloft. It didn't stay aloft very long. It was a little too heavy. But you round the corner, and that's 1908, and you round the corner into the Davidson Center, to the Saturn V Hall, and then above you is this magnificent vehicle, the Saturn V moon rocket, and ours is a National Historic Landmark. There is only three in existence, and ours is a National Historic Landmark to note the contributions of this community to that program. And it is mounted in a way that when you walk around the corner, I cannot tell you how many times I've seen people stand there with their mouths gaping open in just astonishment at the beautiful vehicle that it is. And if you walk all the way under it, and it takes you a while because the Saturn V rocket is 363 feet long, you walk all the way underneath it, and at the very end of the other side of that hall, we have the Apollo 16 capsule. Mm. So once you walk that and, you know, you look at all the complexities of that vehicle, because we have it sectioned out and it's component parts so that you can see the different stages. You get to the end and there's the Apollo 16, and I think when you stand there and you look inside that and then you turn around and you realize that small capsule was sitting on top of that giant rocket, it's a real testament to human achievement, courage, and just one of the greatest stories of, you know, human history, I think.
Yeah, it's like a building laying on its side. I mean, think of that. 363 feet long to take three humans to the moon in that little capsule. I mean, that's what's so amazing, is that their living space was very small for that.
Absolutely. And there's nothing like looking inside that capsule to make sure you understand that. And it's wonderful, and we have the great privilege of having a very large volunteer base of the engineers, many of whom worked on that program and the shuttle program.
Cool.
Skylab. We also have the engineering trainer for Skylab, which, of course, was the first space station, very famously crashed in Australia when it didn't come apart the way it was supposed to. And we have the largest piece of debris from Skylab is on display here in the United States. Now, Australia, which is where it landed, does have some bigger pieces, but this is the largest one in the United States. So you can really see what the structure of the vehicle, and it's just, you know, really fascinating to walk inside that trainer and imagine what it would have been like to be living in space in that, which is essentially a kind of a big tin can. So it's just really, it's an amazing hall that shows you the history, but also on display we have a 1/10 scale model of the Space Launch System, which is the vehicle that NASA is working on here at Marshall Space Flight Center, so that you can kind of see not just where we've been, but where we're going.
Wow. So, you mentioned a lot of great stuff to do, kids camps, adults camps. How do people find out more info?
Well, for the Rocket Center, they can go to rocketcenter.com, and there's a full calendar of events, and we have an IMAX movie theater here as well as a 3D digital theater. So always lots of things to do during the day for that. So rocketcenter.com for Rocket Center visitor information and all kinds of information about Space Camp at spacecamp.com.
Well, Pat, this is great. I think we're going to book our trip down to Huntsville and see it. I want to see all this stuff again. It's been too long.
been too long, and Huntsville's a great town to come and spend the weekend in. We have, we're known for microbreweries here. So, as a matter of fact, every Thursday in the summer, we have a beer garden under the Saturn V rocket. So,
That sounds amazing.
Smart idea.
Come visit us. Have a nice German meal. And drink some handcrafted microbrewery brews underneath the Saturn V. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
Sounds pretty cool. All right. Well, you sold us. Pat, thanks so much for talking to us today.
My pleasure. We'll see you soon.
We've been talking with Pat Ammons, Director of Communications for the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Thanks very much for joining us.
At the Cincinnati Observatory, we hear some great, hilarious questions from kids, right? And we also get a lot from adults.
Yeah, we
Let's
do.
Let's be honest,
it's
right?
True.
It's like, come on. So this is actually a question from an adult, from a caller.
Okay.
The phone has been ringing off the hook, has it not? I mean, it's been a lot of phone calls.
Yeah, we've had a busy summer.
And I love that I always act like, who could be calling? And they're never for me. I'm like, why do you care, right? Like, whatever. Anyway, so somebody called a couple weeks ago, and they asked us why we weren't having our Saturn day when it was in opposition. And we, you know, didn't really have an answer. And then they asked, so what is opposition?
Uh-huh.
And I thought, why are you so upset about this? Or what's it matter if you don't even know what that means?
They're like, I can't believe the observatory calls itself an observatory. And they're not even looking at Saturn in opposition when Saturn's in opposition.
He like had his monocle on and his like, you know, pipe or whatever and was like all dignified and fancy. I don't know.
And then he's like, what's the deal with the opposition? No, and then he said, by the way, tell me what opposition means. Well, that's a good... I should
you
have done it.
You can never, ever do another impersonation ever again. It's like watching a dog walk on its hind legs. It's like very unnatural,
right,
but very funny.
You're not supposed to do it.
That's right. So what's the deal with opposition,
What is
Dean?
The deal with opposition?
So what is
this,
it?
It does make the rounds on media and social media because that's the time when that's the best time to see the outer planets. So Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. When they're at opposition, that's when they're closest to the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So we call it opposition because the sun is on one side of the sky and the planet is on the other side of the sky. So it's on the opposite side of the sky.
Okay.
And the Earth,
literally opposition.
Exactly.
Opposite. Okay.
And the Earth is right in the middle. So at that configuration, that's when we're closer to the outer planets like Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
So this caller was right, is that Saturn was at opposition on June 27th.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could have had an event on June 27th when Saturn was closest, but it was so far south and so low in the sky, we'd have to wait till about 11 or midnight before we actually got to see it. Because we do have trees in our way, especially in the south. So the observatory has had a history of cutting down trees to view objects. So in Mars opposition 2003, when all those people came, we were sitting in the telescope about 4 weeks ahead of time. And we're like, you know, Mars is going to go right behind that tree. And so we had to cut down the tree, we topped the tree 20 feet down so we could have a clear view of Mars in 2003.
Dang.
You never saw the top of that tree?
You're just like, zoom, done.
Hey, you know.
Cutthroat.
I am cutthroat. I mean, I love trees, but.
You do like trees,
They can't block Saturn and Mars for me. Sorry.
So can I use Saturn in opposition like people do Mercury in retrograde?
Yeah.
Look, I'm sorry. Saturn's opposition. I can't deal with that today.
I did get a crank file on that somebody wanted to. It's called Saturn Return. That's what it is.
Seriously?
Saturn return. Because Saturn comes back to the same place every 29 and a half
years. That's right, yeah.
And so every 29 and a half years, that's supposed to be a cycle of your life. So when
I read
you're 29
an article about
and a half, you should have gotten your stuff together by then.
Any day now.
And then when, and then when you're 59, apparently, then you go through something else again.
That seems more realistic.
Yeah. And then by the third one, I don't know if you're still around after that. It's 70.
Again, womp womp.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, Saturn return. So you got to look at the last 29 and a half years of your life and really, really think about it. Really take a hard look.
Yeah, yeah, really look inward.
What do you see?
Do you like what you see?
Do you like what you see? So that's the answer. So nice. we should have looked at the Saturn opposition, but that tree was in the way. And so unfortunately, we had to wait till July. And so now July is going to be an awesome month to see Saturn. It's still going to be pretty close, but we're not going to make the same mistake with Mars. We're going to look at Mars at the end of July when it's closest.
Oh, okay.
Tree or no tree.
You're like, that tree was in the way. Sorry. Bye.
And it's a neighbor's tree. So.
Oh, that's right.
I know. So in the middle of the night, if you see me out there climbing, I'll hitch up on a rope and take off the top of that tree.
Look, no, sorry.
We're just going to wait till later and
all
then
right.
We'll see it later.
That's nice of us.
Yeah. That's very considerate. We like their neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And their trees.
Right.
Not
totally.
That. Not that one. That one's gone. I'm in the middle of the night. It's gone.
That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks so much to Pat Ammons from the U.S. Space and Rocket Center for joining us.
We'd like to hear from you. On social media, you can find us on Facebook. Just search Looking Up WVXU. And on Twitter, we're at Looking Up Podcast. You can also drop us an email at lookingup@wvxu.org.
We would love to hear from all of our kid listeners or their parents. What's your favorite planet? Do you want to live on Mars? What would you ask Dean if you could? Send us an email or post it on Facebook or Twitter.
Now, remember to subscribe to Looking Up wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating and comment on iTunes. If you're new to Looking Up, you can always find all of our past episodes at wvxu.org/lookingup.
Our theme song and additional music is by Y, that's W-H-Y ? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terrorbird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstrow is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.